Your Partner in Success Radio is a free business podcast with host Denise Griffiths. It's all about great stories, conversation, and context to help you move your business and life forward with actionable tips and advice from her guest experts. To listen and subscribe, just find us on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you consume your podcasts.
Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths. And the question today is, how in the world do you get unbusy? Is that even a word? It's certainly a frame of mind. So our guest, Dr. Garland Vance, is here to share the effects of busyness on leaders and how to overcome both individual and organizational overcommitment. Now, he's here to talk to us about what is busyness, B-U-S-Y-N-E-S-S, not business, busyness. How busyness hurts our productivity, the need to have definite steps to beat busyness, and four best practices that highly productive but unbusy people utilize. And I think he's got some stories for us there. And finally, the benefits of getting unbusy. I have needed to do that for the longest kind of time, and I'm getting better. So Garland has been helping people and teams get clarity about their life and their leadership for over 20 years. He's an author, a speaker, and a consultant. He has helped his clients, which span from Fortune 500 companies to nonprofits, stress less, accomplish more, and fulfill their highest priorities. He's also the author of Getting, G-E-T-T-I-N, he's from the South, I think, Getting Unbusy. I am. It's in my hands as we speak. And Forbes named this as one of the 7 books that everyone on your team should read. That's high accolades indeed. Garland, welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm so excited to have you here because busy, unbusy, oh my God. You need to speak. Maybe coach me, maybe counsel me, walk me back from the edge. So here we are.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks, Denise. It's great to be here.
Oh, thank you. And thank you for sending the book. I've been over the long Thanksgiving weekend. I had a lot of people, I got to watch Christmas movies. Me, I had a stack of books. So yours was one of them. And I've got
the exact same thing.
You too.
I didn't read my own books, but I read several books over the break.
I mean, Christmas movies are fine and dandy. I can turn them on and listen to them if they're quiet. I actually never watch them. I fall asleep. But give me a book. I'm awake for hours. So let's talk about you before we get, because I've got questions, you can tell. Tell people a bit about yourself, because you worked with Chick-fil-A, I think. I mean, you've got an interesting history.
Yeah, so my background is actually in Christian ministry. I did my master's through seminary. My doctorate of leadership is through a seminary. And I spent 15 years with Chick-fil-A on the nonprofit side. Doing that was I developed with my wife and a team of people that I was able to hire. We developed a 4-year leadership development program. And then spent a couple more years in church ministry, and then decided that my wife and I were ready to open up our own leadership consulting and coaching business. And so we've been doing that for the last 3 years, and it's been during that time that I was able to write Getting Unbusy and publish that.
How did you get the title? I mean, it makes perfect sense to me. I am probably like you, an A-type personality. I'm highly creative. I've got things to do, by golly, but it'll wear me out. So how did you come up with that title?
Well, for me, it was, the original title was actually Kill Busyness. And as I started talking with other people, that got a little bit of negative reaction of having kill in the first, in the first word of the book. It's actually in the subtitle now. But I just started, as I was talking with people, it was, well, what are we actually trying to do? And the answer that I kept saying is, I want busy to become a bad word in our society. I want, when somebody asks you how you're doing and someone responds, oh, I'm good, I'm just so busy, I want shock and appall to be there. So I want to eliminate this word from our vocabulary. And so through that came this title of unbusyness. And then I just, to be perfectly frank, I remembered my years of growing up when people talked about getting busy, and it was a euphemism for something completely different.
Right.
And I was like, we need to get unbusy. And that's the title that really stuck.
And, you know, I've read this book. You ought to see it. It's got all kinds of little notes sticking out all over it. And I am ashamed to admit that I didn't read the subtitle, 5 Steps to Kill Busyness and Live with Purpose, Productivity, and Peace. You see what you want to see, don't you? I did see purpose, productivity, and peace. I did not see kill busyness.
That's funny.
I missed it. So apparently I wasn't interested in killing anything. I just wanted to stop. Just stop. And we have to train ourselves, how to do that. Quickly, you've got a bit of an accent, as do I. It's slight. Where are you from? Tell people where they can find you.
Sure. So I live now in Knoxville, Tennessee, moved here about 3 years ago. I did grow up in the South, Texas, North Carolina, Georgia, Alabama, Tennessee, all over. So I do have a bit of a Southern twang.
I tell people that I don't have an accent until I hear myself say it, and then I just go, bleh. What I have is a drawl. That's different. So just so y'all know, it's not an accent. We just, we don't get real. We slur our consonants. That's the only way I can explain it.
Very long vowels. Yeah.
Very. Gas is 2 to 3 consonants. That's how we talk. So listen, so once you got this in your head to get unbusy, and thank you for that, because it really, it does us so much damage, and I definitely want you to go a little bit further there. But what I found is the more that I was busy, and I would catch myself saying, oh, I'm just so busy. I remember years ago mortally offending a very good friend of mine, and I didn't mean to, but he pulled up into my yard. I never invite people, to my home unless they're invited, and he didn't. He drove from Georgia, I think, and just showed up in my yard, which kind of irritated me. And, I kept saying, I'm just so busy. I'm so busy. And he got very offended. We were both offended for different reasons. And it took a while to overcome that. And I had to learn to not just put in people's face just how busy I was, how important I was, just gasping for air, because it was ridiculous. I wasn't that busy. I was irritated. I wasn't busy. So I'm an introvert. Don't call before you show up, please. I will not open the door. But the thing is, I realized after we kind of sorted that out that I was being very rude. Really rude, and it wasn't intentional. So then I started kind of going down what you're teaching in this book. What is busy? Am I really busy? And I realized in pretty short order that multitasking, oh my gosh, that's about the stupidest thing you can do. And women in particular pride ourselves on multitasking, which is why our husbands have pink underwear. I mean, come on. This is stop it. Concentrate on something, enjoy it, finish it, and move on.
Yeah, it is. What's so interesting in our society right now is that busyness is something that all of us claim to be. In fact, even in the midst of a pandemic, people have said that they're now busier now than they've ever been before. And so busy is just this normal thing that we talk about. And yet we don't realize that when you tell a friend like you did, Denise, or when we tell somebody that we work with that we're busy, what we're unintentionally saying to them is, I don't have time for you. You're not as important to me as this other thing that I've done. And so busyness really harms our relationships, but it also does, it does all kinds of damage to us, physically, mentally, emotionally, relationally. It does all kinds of damage to us, and I figured that out only because of the experience that I tell about in the book, where I went to my doctor with all of these problems. Chronic migraine headaches and heart palpitations and forgetfulness and extreme tiredness and went to my doctor and said, what is going on? And as he began to unpack my life, what he said is, okay, you're working 50 to 60 hours a week. You're working on your doctorate in leadership. You're traveling 60 days a year. You've got three young kids at home. You're involved in your church. You're involved in the community. Your problem is that you are overcommitted. You have too many things that you're doing, and it's stressing you out. So this busyness doesn't just hurt our relationships. It really takes a toll on us, like I said, physically, mentally, emotionally, relationally, even in our productivity and our business.
It really does. And when one of the big problems that I have had and continue to still struggle with is overcommitting, and I do overcommit to my clients. I mean, that's just how I operate. The worst person I overcommit to is, guess who? Me. Because
yourself.
I don't know how to tell me no. Yeah, and no is a complete sentence, by the way. So I will often have to sit down and say, Denise, nope, and mean it. But I have to take the time to realize that I have overcommitted to myself. It's like, okay, I've got the roofer coming on Sunday. I've got this. And all of a sudden, I'm breathless and irritated.
Yeah.
And I don't want to live like that. Nobody does.
Nobody does, yeah. And the thing of it is that we tend to think that if we have a good idea, it must mean that we should do it, and we should do it right now. And so we overcommit to our own selves because we want to be more, we want to do more, we want to get more. And those inhibiting beliefs drive our tendency to want busyness and to add busyness into our lives.
It also prevents us from doing any in-depth thinking about what we're doing because we're busy.
Yeah.
Our brain is all of a sudden running off to the corner going, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, geez. And now you have to stop what you're doing. And in my case, I go make a gumbo without fail. I will go make a gumbo because it's a difficult dish to make. It requires a lot of concentration. And it gets me out of that stop beating yourself up, Denise, which we do. And it's been my experience, and I'd love to hear what you think about this, is when you overcommit to yourself, of course you're not going to be able to really follow through. Then you're aggravated, you're irritated, you're disappointed. And that follows through to everything else in your life, doesn't it?
It does, absolutely. You know, one of the things that was so interesting in the research, so a little background to this, I know you know this story, but a little background to this is when I went to my doctor and he said, hey, you're too busy, it's killing you. I was working on my doctorate in leadership at the time, and so I decided to research busyness and what it was doing to leaders and to organizations, and it ended up becoming the sole focus of the rest of my doctoral studies and my dissertation. But as I did that, one of the things that came out is that shame and busyness are intricately tied together. So,
yes.
So shame makes us busy, right? We don't feel like we're enough. We want to be a better version of ourselves. And so we start beating ourselves up. And the only way that we know to solve that problem is to do something. And so we commit and we commit and we commit in an attempt to make ourselves the better version of ourselves that we want to be. But then when we can't live up to those expectations because we have so many commitments, we don't have the time, energy, and attention to become that version of ourselves that we want to be, what happens is it drives us further into shame. And so this creates this awful cycle that never ends of, I feel shame, so I do more. I can't do it all, so I feel shame, so I do more. And it is nonstop. So we've really got to break this cycle of busyness first by starting with those inhibiting beliefs that we have of, it's not that I'm not enough, it's that I have rethink that inhibiting belief and replace it with some empowering truths like, I am enough, I deliver excellence to my clients, you know, and just really beginning to replace those inhibiting beliefs.
And shouldn't that become, Garland, a priority in how you treat yourself?
Absolutely.
I mean, shouldn't it be something that you do every day, is have that chat with yourself about, you've got this. I'm really good at this. I'm really proud of this. Now let's prioritize what is important today, tomorrow, whatever it's going to be. I can't do 5-year plans. Just that's not in my wheelhouse. But I can do a week, and I will prioritize like crazy.
That's great. Yeah, I actually love 5-year plans. I write down my 10-year goals every morning, and so I do tend to think long term. But the last
you mean a week is not long term.
No, to me it's not. But I'll tell you, at the end of my 10-year goals, I'll write down, you know, so I'll say X number of books sold and X number of clients helped, and you know, there's these goals. But at the end of it, it says, I want to achieve all of this while investing in the relationships that are most important to me, staying healthy, and living an unbusy life. And so that's the last thing that I write every day, is a reminder that if I accomplish all these goals but destroy my most important relationships in the process, destroy my own sanity in the process, then those goals won't be worth it.
And see, that's brilliant. I mean, I love that you're writing that same thing down every day, because you're reinforcing it to your subconscious, to your conscious, and, you know, repetition is very helpful.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah.
Repetition in the bad way, though, is not helpful. And unfortunately, a lot of us pick on our own selves really badly. So my priorities these days is to have a talk with Denise about being such a punk. It sounds terrible. But, I mean, I will beat myself half into insanity and then realize that none of it's real. I have to ask myself, is this real? Is this really real? Why am I talking to myself in a way that, honestly, Garland, if anybody spoke to me in a Walmart parking lot the way I speak to myself, I'd bloody their nose and probably go to jail.
Right.
But we all do it, yep. Don't we?
We all do. And really, every day, you know, whether you're a leader, whether you're an entrepreneur, every day you're left with choice of self-compassion or shame. And so, you know, busyness and shame are linked together, but you're left with this challenging question of, am I going to show myself the compassion that I would show other people, or am I going to beat myself up because I don't live up to my own expectations?
Say that again. That was absolutely brilliant. So say it one more time for our audience.
Sure. So we're left every day with the question of, am I going to shame myself or show myself compassion? And we show ourselves compassion, and which actually, so I'm not going to say it perfectly, but that actually drives our productivity. That makes our lives better, whereas shame is just beating ourselves up for not meeting our own expectations.
Now, let's talk about, thank you. Let's talk about our own expectations. What is reasonable and what is absolutely not reasonable? I'll tell you what I think. I think most things are reasonable. Now, if I say, Denise, you're going to jump on a rocket and you're going to go to the moon, that's not unreasonable. That's a little bit nuts. But we have to understand, I think, what is reasonable to us and how we narrate that to ourselves. Because look, we're storytellers. The stories that we tell ourselves to ourselves about ourselves can be very damaging, or they can have you going, I like that. Now let's go do something about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have this saying that I use a lot, and it's even in the book, where I say, you can do anything you want, but you can't do everything at once. So I am in full agreement with you that anything, really, almost anything is possible. I can't sprout wings and fly, you know, but there, if given enough time, energy, and focus, you can accomplish just about anything. But you can't accomplish everything you want to accomplish all at one time. And this is one of those areas where busyness really gets us. And I define busyness as an overcommitment to too many good commitments. And what happens when we begin to overcommit ourselves to all of these goals that we're going after, whether it's business, whether it's work, whether it's family, you know, whatever it is, when we set too many goals all at one time, we diffuse our energy and we don't get any of them done. So I love the idea that, hey, anything is possible. You can achieve anything you want, but you can't do it all at one time.
And see, that makes perfect sense to me. And that takes us back to priorities. I have to have talks with myself every morning because, listen, I'm one of those people, I don't sleep a whole lot anyway. It's just not my natural frame of mind. It's catnap. I just don't sleep all that much. And I would wake up for many, many years and jump out of bed, hit that floor running. My mom would say, oh, God, you know, the devil is saying, oh, God, she's awake. And I mean, I was just at it. She meant it too. But I had to train myself. I had to become aware that I was not taking those moments when, you know, first waking up and you're coming out of a dream or your subconscious has given you the answer to something, which, by the way, happens all the time if you'll sit and listen with it. But I had to train myself to stay in bed, talk to myself or listen to myself and express extreme gratitude. And then, and only then, will I allow myself to jump out of bed and, you know, the devil says, oh, God, she's awake. Because by then, I am awake. And I'm moving. But it's had to become a priority for me because it wasn't working. I mean, I was not listening to the voices in my head. And I know that sounds insane, but I think you know what I mean. We do get a lot of information that trickles into our brain. It trickles into our thoughts. It may show up as a thought bubble above our head, but we have to listen to those things, and you can't be busy, busy, busy and still hear, can you?
No, you're absolutely right. So there's a bunch of research that that's taken place around busyness and our mind and just our ability to think. And so one of the biggest problems is that the busier we are, the harder it is to focus and the harder it is to reflect. So if I, you know, it's like multitasking that you talked about a second ago. If I'm trying to do five things at once, it's impossible for me to do any of them well and to think deeply about them and to do them with excellence. It's impossible for me to take a step back if I'm doing five things at once to take this step back and to think in terms of how could I do this better? How could I do this in less time? How could I make this easier? Who could I give this to? So busyness just destroys our minds because we're constantly focusing on what's new and shiny. There's this in the movie Up, the Disney movie, there's a dog in there. And every time the dogs see squirrels or think they see a squirrel, you know, they stop whatever they're doing and they go squirrel, you know, and get distracted. And in the end of the movie, I hate to ruin it if anybody hasn't seen it, but at the end of the movie, that's what ends up being the plight of the bad guy dogs, is that they get distracted when somebody goes squirrel and they all, you know, they all crash planes because it's a Disney movie. Of course, dogs are flying planes in this Disney movie.
Well, yeah.
But,
and cats.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, cats can fly. You gotta see mine. They can fly right over my head.
So yes, this overcommitment to too many good commitments just absolutely destroys our ability to focus for very long. And it also releases cortisol. And one of the things that cortisol does is it prevents us from thinking long-term. You know, cortisol is there whenever we get stressed out, and it's supposed to help us focus
fight,
in on
right,
what's
fight or flight.
In front of us.
Right.
Right. And so this cortisol that focuses, so it's adrenaline is what causes the fight or flight, but it's cortisol that actually shrinks our ability to think long term. You know, so if I get attacked by a bear, I live in Tennessee, that's not unusual. So if I get attacked by a bear, cortisol there, I'm not thinking about my 10-year goals because I need to deal with the bear that's right in front of me. But what busyness does is it replicates that bear attack, where I can't think long-term because all I can do is focus on the fires that are right in front of me.
Exactly. You know what I taught myself to do, and I'm actually pretty proud of this, because meditation, again, like sleeping, is not something that I'm an expert at. It's, I, either if I try to meditate quietly, I will either fall over and drool, no question about it, or, and it can be July 3rd, I am mentally making my Thanksgiving dinner list, my grocery list. I don't know why, it just happens. But I did realize that sticking my head in an open refrigerator door is meditation because I go blank. Who doesn't? You open that door and you are blank. So I call it my open refrigerator door syndrome meditation. And when I catch myself going, oh my gosh, you know, and I catch myself shallow breathing because I know that all of a sudden I've got about 14 things racing through my brain, I will deliberately, no matter where I am in the house or outside, go open my door and stick my head in there. It works.
That's,
I know it sounds insane, but yeah, it works.
Well, and you know, that's, I think that's so much part of discovering how we operate and how we work, is you have to figure out what works for you. And and so an open refrigerator door, that's A-okay. I put on headphones and close, you know, turn down the lights really low. And it's just kind of the drum. There's a drumming soundtrack that I listen to that's just in the background. And that helps me kind of tune out all of the distractions. So I'm going to try the refrigerator door. My fear would be that I'd see the cheese drawer and all of a sudden get really excited by the cheese.
I don't see anything. I have, you know, the French doors, and I will open them both. And if I can, if there's room in there, stick my torso in there and just cool down, slow my brain down, slow my body down. And after a while, I realized that the doors are now dinging because they don't want me to be open that long. It works. It works really well for me. And there's nobody here to yell at me, turn it off, close it, stop. But it's just one of those things that if I don't stop, all of a sudden I am shallow breathing because now my brain is racing. My breathing is a mess, and I'm exhausted just all of a sudden. So that's, you know, how I overcome that. But, and it does, you know, you were talking about business, how it hurts our productivity, which we've covered. So, Garland, what are some of the definite steps, other than sticking your head in the refrigerator door like a moron, beat busyness? I mean, I know you've got some terrific steps, so can you share those?
Sure. So what the research discovered is that there's five steps to beating busyness and replacing it with purpose, productivity, and peace. So the first step is you decide. You have to decide that busyness isn't worth it. And I actually offer a free assessment that helps people determine if they are busy and then give some insights on what they can do next. But the first step is you decide to get unbusy. The second step is you begin to deconstruct. And this was one of the most surprising things that I found in my own life when I implemented it, but also in researching it. What I was finding is that most people would say, if you're too busy, you aren't clear on your life purpose, or you need to write down, you know, what your goals are. Well, as soon as you do that, you're adding more commitments to an overcommitted life. So what we discovered is that the second step is that you have to deconstruct. You deconstruct some beliefs that we talked about, I need to be more, do more, get more. You deconstruct bad habits like saying yes too quickly and too often, not living with any boundaries. And then finally, you deconstruct your unwanted commitments. And that's where I take people through an exercise of evaluating all of their commitments and then determining of those, which do I want to get rid of? The third step is you begin to design the life you want to live. And you mentioned this in the introduction. This is when people begin to design their lives around what I call the core four, the four practices of highly productive and unbusy people. And those core four are relationships, recreation, rest, and reflection. So highly productive, unbusy people build those into their calendars first. Relationships, recreation, reflection, and rest. And then they build everything else around those core four. So the fourth step, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm going to come back to it, so remind me, but let's talk about reflection. So keep on going.
Okay. Sure. So the fourth step is you begin to develop a calendar and a mindset around this unbusy lifestyle. So most of the time people think that busyness is a calendar problem, and we don't even talk about calendaring and time blocking until we get to step four, because there's so much more stuff that's going on than just, you know, you're a bad time manager. So we develop this unbusy habit, unbusy mind, and unbusy calendar. And then the final step that we talk about is you draw others in. You draw in your family, your friends, and your coworkers. If you get unbusy just by yourself, it ends up being very lonely. And I learned this the hard way when one of my clients, after she had gone through all four steps, the first four steps, I said, "How do you feel?" And she said, "I just feel really lonely." And I was like, "Oh gosh, there's got to be something else here." And it's drawing in your family, your friends, and your coworkers to live this highly productive but unbusy life together.
How was she lonely? I'm not sure I'm following how that happened to her.
Sure. So I said to her, it was our last coaching session, and I was celebrating how far she'd come. And I said, you know, "How do you feel about this?" And she said, her name was Kim, and she said, "I just feel really lonely." And I said, "Well, tell me what you mean by that." And she said, "I'm unbusy. I've made all of these changes in my life, but none of my friends understand this. They're all super busy. They only have a minute, you know, or an hour for grabbing coffee together. My coworkers are still rushing around like crazy, and you know, they're stressed out and wondering why I'm not stressed out all the time. So nobody understands the unbusyness that I've gone through." And that's when Kim and I sat down and we were like, "Okay, you know what? We need to formulate a plan to help you get other people involved with this, because we don't want unbusyness to lead to loneliness."
No, and I would think, just observing what you're talking about here, is that people probably all of a sudden viewed her differently because she wasn't reacting the way that she used to. She was probably getting a heck of a lot more done, but not crowing about it. So is that part of it, that people were all of a sudden going, "I don't know what happened to you. Did you take something this morning before you came to work? What's going on?"
Yes, and people look at us strange. You know, people expect you to tell them how busy you are. And so when somebody says, "How are you doing?" and you say, "I'm highly productive and not stressed out," you know, or something along those lines, it really throws them for. So yeah, they were looking at Kim and going, "Wait a second, you're accomplishing a whole lot more, but you're going home earlier than you've ever gone home. You're happier now than you've been. What is happening here, and what strange drug have you done?" And really all she had done was changed her relationship to busyness.
Okay, I have to ask, did any of her coworkers, family, friends, anybody, did anybody come to her and say, "What's going on with you? Tell me more. I would love to do what you're doing. Can you help me?" Did that happen, or did people just kind of roll their eyes and go, "Well, midlife crisis," or whatever it was they were thinking? Because people can be unconsciously cruel and not even know it.
Yeah, I think once she started getting the results that she was getting, right, she's getting more done at work and in less time, she ended up having her entire office go through some exposure to these ideas. And so I haven't followed up with them for a while. I don't know if they've implemented it or if they all read it. But yeah, it was a something's different. What's going on? I want what you've got, but it's a little scary because you're telling us that we are going to change how stressed out we feel all the time.
But I'm glad that, you know, people were noticing and questioning. I think that's terrific. Instead of just going, "Oh, you know, I don't know about her. Let me go be busy over here by the water cooler."
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's what's so fun with so many of the clients that I've been able to work with, whether it's accountants or realtors or entrepreneurs, is is you begin to see their lives opening up, and their families are commenting on how much more present they are. Their businesses are talking about it. And it's just really exciting to hear the stories of the moms and the dads who saying, man, I used to work 70 hours and never had time to engage with my kids without checking email. And now I'm present with them and I'm getting more done than ever before, but I'm doing it with really strong boundaries. When I shut down, I shut down for the day and I'm with my family. That's so exciting to me.
Let's talk about boundaries, because those are difficult for a lot of people. Me, my mom used to tell me that my first word was not mama, daddy, dog. It was no. And she said I meant it. And to me, the word no is a complete sentence. I think I've mentioned that before. I don't really often feel the need to expand why I just said no. I will if it, yeah. Becomes a problem, but no is no. And I think the word no, the idea of no, is something we need to really delve into as people, as entrepreneurs, as parents, as, pet owners. No. What is wrong with the word no? Why are people just so afraid of it?
I think one of the reasons that we're afraid of it is early on in life, we are rewarded for doing what we're told. And for meeting expectations, right? As parents, I was probably the exact same way of saying no to my parents, but that didn't have good results normally, right? That would be disobedience. Disobedience doesn't come with good privileges. And even when you get to school, we're told this is what you're supposed to do. This is when you're supposed to do it. So we're trained for decades on being yes people. And even saying yes to ourselves whenever we have an idea of something we should do. So this whole idea, I talk about one of the worst habits that we develop is that we default to yes and defend to no, meaning as soon as somebody asks us to do something, we by default say yes. That's a terrible habit to have. And then if we can't do it, we start defending it. Here's all the reasons that I can't. And one of the best practices we can get to help us beat busyness is we switch that and we begin defaulting to no. So when somebody asks us to do something, before I've even thought about it, my default answer is probably not going to happen. No, not going to do that. And then we start defending our yes, meaning we look at our lives and we go, do I really want to do this? Do I have time to do this? If I say yes to this, what am I going to get out of my life in order to make time to do this? And just that little change in mind of, I'm going to default to no, eliminates so much of our stress and busyness because we've taken a couple of minutes to think about, do I really want to do this? Do I really have the time, energy, and attention to do this? And it's very empowering. I have people now who will text me and they'll say, I know the answer is probably no, but could you do this? And if I say no, they're not disappointed because that's exactly what they've expected.
And see, I'm feeling so brilliant right now because...
You are brilliant, Denise.
I'm listening to you say, that no should be your default. It actually is for me. No has always been my default. And then once I've said, okay, no, not going to happen. And then my brain kicks into gear and I'm like, hang on a second, because who doesn't like a good challenge? So now I'm challenging myself to, not only can I do that, but I think I would really enjoy it. And you know what? I can do a better job than he or she expects me to do because their vision or idea for this is a little bit limited, but I've got mad skills. So yeah, let me take another look at this. So your creativity, just all of a sudden, once you've said no and you've given yourself that mental break for a bit, then you're opening up to go, So see how brilliant I am? I already knew this.
You are. You are brilliant, Denise.
And humble too. I'm very, very humble. Okay, so what I wanted to, and we keep going back to this because I think priorities are something that they're difficult to overlook because we are busy. We are kicking ourselves in the fanny. We are going, oh, geez, I forgot to order groceries. Who's going to feed the cat? You know, just silly things. But I'm looking at, in your book, page 122, and there's a section that says, how do you design space for dreams and priorities? And I think that is so important. And you've got 6 steps. Do you have a moment to kind of go over those with me?
Sure, absolutely. So first, let's differentiate between dreams and priorities. So a dream is something that you want to do, but you don't really have a plan or a deadline for it, right? It's just something. So I want to be certified as a skydiver. Well, I don't have a plan or a deadline for that. So it's a dream for me. But as soon as I assign a deadline to a dream, it becomes what I call a priority. And there's 6 steps that help you design more space in your life to think about and to accomplish your dreams and priorities. So the first one is you just write down your dreams. A lot of times we're not thinking about this. So I actually do this every quarter. I have a dream list and about 6 different categories within that dream list. And I just go in and I say, man, one day I'd love to do this. Wouldn't it be cool if I could do this? And so I have places that I want to travel and books that I want to write and, you know, just all kinds of things, you know, experiences that I want to do with my family. So you write down your dreams. And then the second step is every 90 days you select between 2 and 4 priorities. You take that dream list and you begin to say, okay, what are the 2 to 4 things that I'm going to do. And the reason that we select such a low number of just 2 to 4 is if you can concentrate for a shorter period of time on less goals, in the long run, you're going to accomplish a lot more goals. And so selecting every 90 days, 2 to 4 priorities. And then third is you determine what's not a priority. Like, actually give yourself permission to say no to all the other things on your list. So I had to do this in my own life when I was writing this book. I in the midst of writing it, my family decided that we were going to pack up. We wanted to move to the mountains of Tennessee. And I knew we were living in Texas. And so we were going to have to sell our house, look for a new house, buy a new house, move everything, move our kids' schools, all those things. And so I knew that that was going to be the priority for several chunks of 90 days. And so I said no to the book and just stopped writing it for 9 months.
And that makes sense. That makes absolute sense.
Yeah.
But was your brain, and I have to ask, was your brain still working on the book anyway?
It had moments of doing it, but I ended up actually making a commitment externally because I didn't want to slip into that. So I actually went to other people and said, I need you to hold me accountable that I'm not going to work on this book for the next 90 days. And that, then I knew when they called me, if I had worked on it, that they were going to read me for that. So that was what I built in there to say, hey, these are the things that are not the priority. Yeah. So then the fourth step, Denise, is we block time for our priorities every single day, even if it's just 5 minutes to make some kind of momentum on that priority, those 2 to 4 priorities, little bits of momentum add up major over time. And so this step, you track your progress, and that it's just about, hey, how am I doing? A lot of times we see the gap between where we are and where we want to be instead of the gains that we've made. And so tracking your progress helps a ton in knowing, what did I accomplish today? Have I made progress? I do that by a daily journal where I just write down, what did I accomplish against my goals each morning? And then the final step is, at the end of those 90 days, you review and update your dreams and priorities list. And so it becomes this kind of cycle of every 90 days, I'm taking time to think about my dreams, turn a few of those into priorities, and then every day work on those, track the progress, and then do it again.
See, I never thought about 90 days because, like I say, a week for me, well, for my clients, I mean, I can get their work done for months at an end. I mean, I'm okay when it's me. I'm not as good to myself as I am to my clients, and I'm going to have a talk with myself about that because it's not very smart.
Well, you know what? Well, and there's tremendous, again, great research on there out there that our brains tend to think in 90-day chunks automatically. So if you think about most people who set New Year's resolutions or who set yearly goals, they start working on those in October when the year is about to end. So if we can begin to think in terms of 90-day goals, 90-day priorities, that's actually how our brains are better wired to think. So I've learned that I can accomplish more in a 90-day period of time than I could over a full year because it's shortened, it's condensed, and I can think in, you know, as long as I'm taking little steps every day, I can get so much done in a 90-day period of time instead of 365 days.
And see, I find that absolutely fascinating because three has always been my number. I do things in chunks of three. I prioritize in chunks of three. My brain doesn't go to four. I don't know why. Just somehow I know that if I can, two doesn't work for me either. It's always three. And I've always been like that. 90 days, three times. So, you know, three times 30. That makes sense. And it actually, you just inadvertently answered a question that I didn't even know I had. I'm telling you, it's just, I love to talk with my guests on this show because I always come up with a, oh my gosh, you know, those moments when you're like, okay, that was brilliant. So thank you, Garland. That was brilliant. I just never considered that 90 days was actually kind of natural to us.
Yeah. Well, My pleasure. It really is. I would encourage you, give it a shot, you know, give it a 90-day shot. And just try it out because it really will revolutionize you in terms of how quickly you can get things done. And Denise, if you already do weekly planning, then it's starting to think in terms of, okay, here's my 3 months. Now this week, what do I need to do to move the ball down the court on this? On this priority. And so you can still use the weekly prioritization, which I do as well, but you're thinking about it in shorter spurts of time.
Gotcha. Okay, so did we cover everything? My brain just went, ooh, neat thing. did we cover everything on how to design space for dreams and priorities? Did we get everything chatted about?
We did, yes. We covered all six steps.
Perfect. So, okay, listen, this is to my audience. Get this book. Seriously, read the book. You ought to see it. It's got sticky notes all over it. I've got pink, you know, markers in some pages. I've got yellow because these colors mean things to me. But I'm looking now at commit to uncommit, which, again, is part of the priorities. It's part of how we, you know, we kind of organize our thoughts and our processes. Why, and whatever, this one's in pink. Whatever the reasons, you're busy because you commit and commit and commit and commit. My eyes crossed when I read that the first time. I was like, oh, he knows me. Oh, geez. So now we're here and we're ready to get unbusy. Is there anything that you really, really want our audience to know about how to get unbusy? We've covered a lot of territory. But are there any kind of tips, advice, tools that you would say to people, go do this now? Once you stop listening to this, once you've written down your notes, go sit in the corner quietly and do this. What do you suggest people do?
Yeah, I would suggest the first thing that I would have people do is ask the question, is busyness helping me live a fulfilled life? And for some people, they're going to look at that and they're going to go, oh, well, yeah, because I get to do all of these different things. But when you add all of those good commitments together, is it helping you live a fulfilled life. Busyness is a lot. I tell the story in the book. My my family went out to eat sushi several years ago, and we love sushi. But my daughter, I have three kids, and my daughter wasn't with us that day. So my oldest son decided to get this scorpion roll that he always gets. And it's two rolls in one. And he normally would split that roll with his younger sister. Well, my oldest son decided that day to eat the whole thing himself. Two rolls in one. And at the end of it, he was so sick that if we said the word sushi for the next 3 years, he would turn green. And that's exactly what busyness is. It's this overcommitment to too many good commitments. Sushi's good, but when we put too much of it in our stomach, it becomes bad. So I would really encourage your listeners to ask this question. Is busyness helping me live the life that I want to, a fulfilled life? Or am I working so many hours and have so many commitments that I'm not living the fulfilled life that I want to? If the answer is nope, busyness isn't helping me, then I would say get the book. Like, it's going to be a game changer for you, and I know because the process has changed my own life and has changed so many other people's as well.
Oh, and I'm one of them. Listen, one of the things that when I started to realize just how busy and unproductive I actually was, because look, I'm a type A personality. I have a team that I have to lead. I've got a crap ton of things that I need to do on a daily, weekly, monthly, hourly basis. I was exhausting myself. I mean, really genuinely exhausting myself. What I realized is that over time, as I would sit and go, why are you doing this? Why are you making these big messes? Why are you overcommitting? I was on the run. I'm not sure what from, but I was always on the run from something, whether it was me feeling bad because I didn't get something done 3 days earlier. And I've got arrows in my notebook that says, go back 3 days, you didn't do this. I really was driving myself bat crap crazy. I really was. But I was always running, and to this day, I can tell you, it was, you know, a different reason every day, but I was always taking off. Oh, I got to do it. Ooh. And it wasn't healthy. I felt bad. My back hurt. I was cranky. I live alone, thank goodness. So I couldn't yell at anybody. But, I mean, I did know, you know, I was known to go outside and kick cut the tires on my car, which is not good when you're barefoot. But I was so overcommitted mostly to myself because my clients are always, seriously, always happy with my work that I was becoming kind of a cranky witch. Wasn't nice. It wasn't good.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is, you know, so often we are running from something or again, trying to run to something. I'm hoping to become somebody better. I want to get more money, whatever it is. I want to be more, do more, get more. And busyness is a covering for the shame and the blame and the fear that we feel sometimes, and yet eliminating that busyness allows us to really slow down and to move at a pace of relationships, move at a pace of priorities, and enjoy life a whole lot more.
Exactly. Now I need to go back to boundaries. Oh, and you forgot to remind me about reflect. We'll get back to that one too.
I did. Oh, yeah.
I blame you. But anyway, let's talk about those boundaries because, man, I had to teach. Look, I'm a workaholic. I'm a recovering kind of sort of workaholic. And it took me a long time to say, walk. My office is in my home. You know, unless I trip on a cat, my commute's pretty easy. But I always work. I'm always working. And I had to finally realize that I wasn't enforcing my own boundaries. I would say, okay, stop working at 7 p.m. Well, it turns out that 7 p.m. is when I wake up again. You know, I'm early morning. I've got a ton of stuff getting done. About midday, I'm like, So I have taught myself to just walk off for 2 or 3 or 4 hours, whatever it's going to take. Then about 7 p.m., I'm like, ooh, I'm back. I've, you know, refreshed, re-energized. I'm breathing fine again. And I'm back into my office. I may be in here until 11, 12, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning. Doesn't matter. I follow my own rhythms. But I tried, and it didn't work. I tried to say, okay, 5 o'clock, you're leaving this office and you're going out into the living room. Guess how that worked? It didn't. So let's talk about end of day boundaries, because, you know, that's something I think it's, especially if you do have family, if you do have commitments to other people, you can't just keep on working just because you didn't get things done.
And that tends to be how we all live, right? Especially with phones now and having instant access to email and social media, and you know, work just eats up our entire lives, and we don't live with boundaries. So the power of boundaries is that boundaries help us get more done in less time. It's Parkinson's law, which says work expands to fill the time allotted. So if I don't build strong boundaries around my work, I'm going to work all the time because work's going to continually expand. So I recommend that people build what's called a workday boundary and an end-of-day boundary. And Denise, for somebody like you who has these different time periods, it may be that the boundary is actually in the middle of the day that you build it, and then you know, you build work around that in the middle of the day. But a workday boundary is when you say, at this time, I stop my job. Period. No matter what, I'm done. I stop my job at this time. Now, what that forces you to do is to get more done in that time. That's a great thing. And then the second boundary is what's called an end-of-day boundary. And an end-of-day boundary is when you say, at this time in the day, I'm going to stop all chores, all work around the house, all things like this. This is so helpful, especially if you have kids at home, to be able to say at 9 p.m., that's when the end-of-day boundary happens. We're not picking up the kitchen anytime after that. We're not doing any more chores after that. We are done, and the rest of the evening can be about relationships or relaxation during that time. But those two boundaries will actually help you get way more done in significantly less time.
They do. I've been practicing that. You know, I've followed my rhythms. I know when I'm alert. I know when I'm probably not going to be alert. Yeah, when I start getting a headache, which happens every day because, you know, I'm shallow breathing, I'm focusing, I'm hunched over those keyboards. When that happens and I start to have physical representations of being too busy or too focused, I have to walk off. I have to. But I also have recognized that those are times when I shouldn't be doing a darn thing other than going outside and watching the squirrels bury nuts in the yard, which they do. I didn't know that for the longest kind of time. But, you know, it's like, really? They're making those holes? It's amazing. You watch squirrels, you can just sit there and be so happy. But I've learned to follow my own rhythms, which took a long time, longer than it should have, because, you know, mostly I'm a fairly intelligent person. But I was busy, 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 busy.
Yeah,
I think we all do that that way.
We do.
Okay, I wanted to go back because I wrote it down this time. Reflection. I think it's so important because, as I mentioned earlier, ideas just kind of pop into our head. They come out of nowhere. For me, it's a shower. If I'm in the shower because I can't go do anything else, you know, all of a sudden my inner angels, I don't know who they are, but, you know, I start getting these tremendous ideas. You know what I did, Garland? I went to Amazon and I bought some bathtub crayons when I'm in there, and whoever is
speaking
to me gives me these. I know. I get these terrific ideas that the minute you step out and that cold air hits you and you're grabbing for the towel, they're gone. You can't, you know, maybe a little bit, but most of you are just going, ooh, it's cold out here. So I scribble all over my walls. Then when I'm done, I take a picture of it. Then I scrub the walls, and I haven't lost anything, but that's when creativity really hits me, is the bathtub or the shower. It's different for everybody else. But then if you don't reflect about those ideas, these gifts that were given to you, What was the good? I mean, really.
Yeah. And sometimes reflection can mean that was a really good idea and I don't need to do anything with it.
Right.
So, but yes, building time daily for reflection is something that I think is really important, and it makes us more productive. So reflection doesn't have to mean, you know, you're sitting with your legs crossed and chanting om, you know, or anything along those lines. I think
or building your grocery list, because that's what will happen to me.
Yeah, I think of reflection in terms of championship sports teams. They always watch the game film. They always reflect on yesterday's game so that they can get better at the next day's game. And to me, that's a huge part of reflection. And so I encourage people to answer three questions on a daily basis that help them reflect well. The first is, what did I accomplish yesterday? And this is actually one of the first things I do every morning. Is I go, what did I accomplish yesterday, particularly against these goals that I've set? Now, what that does is it helps me feel like I'm starting every morning with momentum. I've got this checklist of awesome things I accomplished, even if it was little. I'm still making progress on it. So what did I accomplish yesterday? The second question is, what am I grateful for? So this becomes energizing. Type A's like you and me, we tend to think, again, of all the things that we didn't do and of all the things that we haven't accomplished. And this is, you know, what am I grateful for today? What were the moments yesterday that I'm grateful for? And then the final question is, what could I do differently today? And so looking at the game film and saying, are there any ways that I could improve yesterday from yesterday's performance? Those three little questions, whether you write them down, type them out, or just speak them out loud, help you to reflect on yesterday's game film and then turn around and make today even more purposeful and productive.
And see, I find that brilliant. And I've always heard people who are very, very smart, smarter than me, saying that my goal today is to be 1% better than I was yesterday. If you were really busy and really productive, 1% can be pretty daunting. It sounds like not much, but it can be. So thank you for that. Listen, Garland, we are out of time. I told you this is the quickest hour on the internet. Where can people find you?
Yeah. So I'd love for you to check out the book's website is Getting, no G at the end there, gettingunbusybook.com. And people can actually take a free assessment to see if they are busy and then download 6 free chapters of the book so that they can see if they want to get unbusy.
They want the book. Trust me.
Yeah.
Whoever's listening, you want this book, and have your little markers handy, have your stickies handy, and keep this book handy, because there is an awful lot of important information in here and tools and tips and tricks and stories. It's just really a terrific book. Garland, is there anything else that you want to share with the audience before I cut you loose? And thank you for sticking with me here.
Sure. Oh, it's been my pleasure. So I'll just tell you. When we tell people that we are busy, we brag about busyness, but at the same time, stressed out we are and exhausted we are, it's the same thing as somebody bragging about smoking 2 packs of cigarettes a day but complaining that they have lung cancer. Like, there is something that you can do about this. If you're stressed, overwhelmed, cram more stuff into your life, it's to get unbusy.
Exactly. And, you know, I mean, we're both from the South, so we already know this, but I learned a long, long time ago when somebody says, hey, Denise, how are you doing? I don't instantly say, oh, I'm okay, how are you? I will instantly say, I am well. Thank you so much for asking. And how are you? Because now you've gotten away from that whole busy mantra. You don't have to complain about anything, and you've actually evinced interest in them. It gives you that time to not say, oh, I'm just so busy, I have a headache. Oh, you know, I mean, you don't get to whine, because now you're actually engaging with somebody. Yes, it's a Southern thing, but it's a very smart thing to do as well.
It is. Yeah.
Listen, Garland, thank you so much. It's been absolutely wonderful speaking with you, and I really appreciate you sending the book to me. It's really a blessing to have that on my desk. And I thank you for all of the wonderful tips and the advice that you've shared with our audience. And before we say goodbye, I would like to remind our audience to be sure to look for us on iTunes and Amazon Prime. My podcast is now on Amazon Prime Music. Who knew? So just look for us anywhere you consume your business podcasts. Look for Your Partner in Success Radio and take us along on your success journey. Garland, thank you.
Get your voice heard. If you would like to launch your own far-reaching podcast, contact Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com and go to the podcast tab.